Welcome to the Eco News Report. I'm your host, Tom Wheeler, Executive Director of the Environmental Protection Information Center. And we have the full green gang, the gang green here today. Jen Colt of Humboldt Baykeeper. Hey, Jen.
Hey, Tom.
Larry Glass of the North Coast Environmental Center. Hey, Larry.
Hey, nice to see y'all.
It's nice to see you too. And Scott Creason of Friends of the Yellow River. Hey, Scott.
Hey, y'all.
All right. So we're doing a catch-up episode because we haven't really seen each other much these days. And a bunch of new things are going on at each of our organizations. So I know that all of us have some exciting news here. I am particularly pretty excited about Jen's news. Jen, what is going on with the billboards in the Bay?
Well, since we last spoke, one of them got hauled off, the one in the Bay that fell down the day before Thanksgiving, got hauled off by the billboard company. So we don't have to look at the wreckage of that anymore. But then just last week, the County Planning Commission voted to deny a permit to rebuild the one that fell down south of Eureka. Woohoo! So this is pretty exciting news in large part because it's really a first for Humboldt County. The old billboards that predate permitting have always just been reconstructed, rebuilt, propped up, whatever you want to call it, without permits. So this is the first time the county has actually considered a permit, and they denied it.
That's fantastic. Was it a close vote?
It was a 4-2 vote. There's only 6 planning commissioners right now because Supervisor Fennell has not replaced Bob Morris, who resigned after the Terrigen decision. So yeah, it was a 4-2 vote. And it was great to hear from one of the commissioners how much all the emails that they got from people opposing the billboard really actually swayed them. So thanks to everybody for writing your emails about your feelings about billboards. That definitely helped.
Yeah, the only good billboard is face down in the mud.
Absolutely. So this is the billboard that was on the south of town when you're coming back in on the 101. I think it was most recently like a ag credit or something like that.
Yeah.
Billboard.
Yeah. It's right next to the Elk River, in between the river and the highway. And just on the other side of the river is a California Department of Fish and Wildlife refuge. So, you know, wildlife refuge, then the river, then the billboard, then the freeway. So it's been laying there since last winter, laying in the mud in the wetlands. And there's no way a new billboard would be allowed to be built in that location because it's in the coastal zone. It's on agricultural land. It's a wetland. It's in the riparian zone of the Elk River, and so on and so forth. Billboards today are only allowed on commercial and industrial land. So the county staff had done a lot of pretzels and contortions to explain that this was just rebuilding an existing billboard, even though the uprights had all snapped and the footings would have to all be rebuilt and dug into the wetlands. So it's a real stretch, but that's how they've always been rebuilt. The claim that it's an existing billboard that just needs a little fixing up, you know.
Well, so the county staff have taken a position on that old philosophical question, Washington's hatchet or whose boat was it? If you just replace a piece at a time, is it the same thing in the end when you've replaced all pieces? Very exciting, Jen. I know that we also have some other exciting news coming up here. And before the show, you were saying, well, it's just a billboard. But I'm very excited, in part because I think that it speaks to the changing culture on the Humboldt County Planning Commission, among other things, that we're willing to deny a billboard owner their property rights, which is just golden to me.
It is pretty golden. I have to say that it's not the last word on this because the billboard owner, who also owns the property, has 10 days to appeal the decision. So he's likely going to appeal to the Board of Supervisors, but even they will not have the last word on this. The Coastal Commission will, because it's in their jurisdiction for a coastal development permit. So the county's permit is really just step one. We'll see what happens, but, you know, it's very exciting in terms of, you know, it's capped a several-year period where we've seen 18 billboards come down from along Humboldt Bay on 101 and Highway 255. So, you know, this has been an ongoing battle for decades, And many, many people have been fighting the billboard since, you know, even long before Baykeeper was even formed. And just in the last few years, we've had a lot of success with that. So,
well, that was the point I was about to make, which is that this is the result of your and other people's dogged struggle, Jen, to get this done. And it wouldn't have happened if you hadn't been working on it for decades. So thanks to you and everybody else who's fought. This is what it takes. We are finally getting someplace.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And, you know, really big kudos to the city of Arcata and their attorney, Nancy Diamond, who back in 2006 won on appeal. The city adopted an ordinance requiring these pre-permitting billboards to get a new permit if they were going to be rebuilt after getting knocked down in a storm or something. And so that set a huge precedent that state law doesn't trump local jurisdictions' ability to regulate these things. So,
yeah, nice shout out to Nancy Diamond. I'd like to say I hope you're getting better, Nancy. I know you were in a horrible car accident, so I hope you're healing.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Hopefully she's on the mend.
Well, great news, Larry. So the offices of the NEC are probably closed these days, but the NEC is not closed. You're still hard at work. What's going on in your world?
Well, I'd like to give a shout out to our staff, Chelsea, Casey, and Carrie, our new office administrator, and Caroline, the EcoNews coordinator, all of whom have continued to be very creative and finding ways to get the work done without being able to do it the way we usually do it all together in the office. Casey's come up with a creative way to do some direct action activism and some fundraising. And this summer, we're going to roll out this thing she's calling Trashathon. So I'm looking forward to that. We'll have more news on that as we get into the summer months. But it'll be a safe activity that people can do and be outside, but not be spreading the virus to each other. So yeah, things are going on. We've got a great work-study student, Brittany, who has whose work-study thing ran out, and she's just going to keep working for us anyway. So
perfect.
That's the kind of attitude we like. On the environmental front, you know, I'm still involved in pushing the boulder of legislation for wilderness up the hill, and it's a long slug. It's been going on for 7 years now. It's going to keep going on, especially with this pandemic going on. But we're still working on folks back in D.C., and surprisingly, as little seems to be going on to help us in the pandemic. They are very active right now, the Senate is. So there's opportunity maybe to attach that Public Lands Act to some other bill. So we're looking at that. Locally here, I went on a very interesting field trip to the Ruth Guard Station out in Southern Trinity, where Six Rivers was demonstrating this machinery they've got called an air curtain. And it's on loan to them from CAL FIRE. And what this looks like, if you can imagine, one of the larger shipping containers, the 24-foot variety, with the top cut off of it, and then on the far end of it, a large blower assembly attached to it. It's like on a big sled. And so you can load it onto a low boy and transport it around. But what this machinery allows them to do is burn slash safely. So that, you know, anymore with air quality concerns and with fire concerns, the window for dealing with forest fuels has gotten so tiny that very little can get done. This machinery allows right in the middle of a community, which is where it is right now, right in the middle of Ruth, the town of Ruth, they've got this going. And they're, you know, got it running all day long. At the demonstration, there was no smoke coming from it, at least visible smoke. When we were having the meeting, which was, you know, there's a lot of people there, and everybody's 6 foot apart from each other, so we're spread out over a large area. But it was windy that day, and we were all downwind from this machine. And, I mean, every once in a while, you'd get a whiff. You could tell that there was something burning, but it wasn't. Like if you were by a burn pile of that size, you wouldn't have been able to stay there. So it was pretty impressive to me that there's so little emissions, particularly particulate emissions coming from that, and that they would be able to use it. I don't know if they can use it every month of the year. I suppose maybe in the peak of the fire season, you might not want to use it, but there was no sparks coming from it. Only when they use the excavator to dump a new big batch of wood into it, did a flame kind of begin to pop up over the top of it for just a second, but only a second. The machine cost $150,000, which in the bigger scheme of things is not that expensive if it starts allowing us to treat all these fuels in the forest that are right now not being treated poorly and creating a bunch of smoke that the communities don't like.
Do you have any idea how much acres or square feet or, you know, like how many of these machines would it take to efficiently actually take care of the fuels from a large area? Right.
And that's a great question, Jen. And that's exactly why the Forest Service has borrowed this from CAL FIRE. They're putting that to the test. They want to come up with data after they've used it for a month or two to figure out how much they can treat with this. So this is not like they don't have it to just be using it. They're experimenting with it and they're trying to learn. You know, they learned that they could burn up root balls in it, which is something that's a problem out in the field a lot of times when they have burn piles. The root balls are still there after the pile is gone. But in this, they threw those in there and they burned up as well. And we're going to be monitoring this and I'll let you know how effective it is. It's the most excited I've ever seen somebody from CAL FIRE be there. He was like a proud papa with his toy. It was pretty interesting, but they're pretty excited about it because it will open up opportunities. Like, for instance, the community of Weaverville, they have a 15-day window to do burning in Weaverville on average. This would open that up to where they'd be able to treat fuels. Like, there's fuels created even when they're doing trail maintenance. There's fuels created, and if you can't treat them, you can't deal with them, it's really a problem.
So if you want to check it out, I'm going on YouTube right now, and you can find air curtain burner videos to watch one in action. So it looks like it's pretty neat stuff.
If you're out driving around enjoying our beautiful scenery around here, it's in the right in the town of Ruth, right across the street from the Ruth Guard Station. Right there, you can see it for yourself.
You may mistake it for a big trash can, though, because that's kind of what it looks like.
It does look like an extra long dumpster.
Am I hearing dumpster fire?
A lot cleaner, but yeah.
Yeah, not like our president. You're listening to the Eco News Report. We're talking with the rest of the Green Gang about what has been going on at our organizations, Friends of the Eel River Environmental Protection Information Center, or EPIC, the North Coast Environmental Center, and Humboldt Baykeeper. All right. Somebody wanted to do a, hey, Tom, what about at EPIC?
Hey, Tom, what's going on at EPIC?
Hey, Tom, what's going on at EPIC?
Thanks, guys. I appreciate that. We have a lot of stuff going on. So we have dropped a number of lawsuits recently. So we are challenging a timber sale out on the Klamath National Forest, the Crawford Project. And the Crawford Project is a pretty typical Klamath National Forest project these days, where it contains a little bit of something good in it and a whole lot of something bad. And the whole lot of something bad is over 250 acres of pretty aggressive logging in old growth and mature forests. So they're going to take 250 acres down to 30% remaining canopy. So not a whole lot of forest left. And in doing so, they're going to take two spotted owls. And why this matters is that we barely have two owls left in that area of the Klamath National Forest anymore. And the Klamath is supposed to be one of those areas that owls are actually doing better than in other places, like in Oregon and Washington, where they're almost extinct. So we filed a lawsuit challenging that project. It's in the Eastern District of California. Don't expect that to move very quickly because, like everything else, the courts are pretty heavily impacted by COVID-19 and have slowed down considerably.
30% canopy, Tom. 30% canopy?
30% canopy.
That's not going to be a forest anymore.
No.
That's not going to recover.
That's a couple leave trees here and there. And, you know, what they're doing is that, in theory, they're paying for some of the other work by selling these big, fat pumpkin trees because they get higher value for those. And so then they're going to be able to pay for other parts of the project. I'll believe it when I see it.
There'll just be brush and a bunch of small conifers that come in its place. It won't be a forest.
Yeah, exactly. So this is pretty typical MO of the Klamath National Forest. I think that this is the fifth lawsuit in 5 years that we filed against them. So they are a problem child in National Forest in our area. And I think that they set this bad example that other National Forests look to them and they say, well, you know, the Klamath is doing that. So I think we see that on the Shasta Trinity National Forest, the Mendocino National Forest. Thankfully, Six Rivers has been a whole lot better recently. But, you know, eventually we'll get them to reform their behavior. You know, we'd prefer to do it voluntarily, but if we have to, we'll sue the pants off them. We also filed a lawsuit against the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has been sitting on our petition to list the Humboldt Martin under the Federal Endangered Species Act.
Hey, Tom, what's a martin?
A martin. Hey, that's a good question. A Humboldt Martin, in case you haven't been paying attention, it's kind of like a weasel. It's in the weasel family, the mustelid family, Mustelidae. It's related to fishers, mink, otters even. Think about a long, slender body and a pretty ferocious predator.
Not to be confused with the bird that's called a martin.
Or a bird that's called a fisher, right? Yeah. The animal world, we could maybe come up with some better names, more unique names.
M-A-R-T-E-N, where the martin, the bird, is an I-N.
Yeah, martin.
That makes it really easy.
Yeah. So the Humboldt Martin we once thought was extinct. It was rediscovered in 1996, and there are fewer than 400 individuals left on the planet in this subspecies. And they are in the coastal old growth forests, Northern California and Southern to Central Oregon. So we have four populations left. Each population is reproductively isolated from the other populations, meaning that, you know, they can't reproduce between each other. So we have four functionally isolated populations, each of which is at risk of blinking out right now. You know, one big fire on the Six Rivers National Forest could take all of the martins there. A tsunami up in Central Oregon could take out all the coastal martins in that population. So it's in a really precarious place. And so we've sued the Fish and Wildlife Service because they've been sitting on our listing petition. We filed it 10 years ago. The feds originally denied our listing petition. We sued them. A judge laughed them out of court because obviously something that has fewer than 400 individuals is not doing terribly well. And now they're just refusing to finalize the listing. We have a draft decision which would list the species as threatened. The service doesn't want to finalize that listing decision because they're experiencing a lot of pressure from the timber industry to just do nothing. So we took them to court. We warned them that we were going to take them to court. They didn't listen to us. And so now we're suing them in the Northern District Court of California. It's EPIC together with our friends at the Center for Biological Diversity. And so hopefully we will get the Humboldt Martin listed. And as we in this call know, the Endangered Species Act is the best way that we have to forestall extinction. It is extremely effective in that regard, with over 99% of species that have been listed are still around today. So it's critically important that we get the additional protective measures that are afforded by the ESA and the additional money for things like habitat restoration. So we'll see. Again, you know, filed in federal court, the courts are moving real slow. Although, you know, the Fish and Wildlife Service is just so busted here. You know, there are clear statutory timelines and they violated all those timelines that I would fully anticipate that they'll settle this lawsuit. And cross your fingers that in the next year we'll have more good news for the martin.
There's a theory, Tom, in conservation biology,
yeah,
that certain kinds of species are more likely to, you know, draw the public's attention and get real status as something we understand is important. The way scientists talk about this a lot is charismatic megafauna, tigers, lions, bears, oh my. But I would submit to you that there's a corollary to that, which is the cuteness of the critter.
Yeah.
And on this spectrum, I'm not sure you're going to find a critter cuter than the Humboldt Martin.
Again, go online and do a Google search for the Humboldt Martin. Cute little rounded triangular ears, real fuzzy, looks totally sweet. It's smaller than a house cat. Yeah, you know, you would just want to snuggle up with one, but if you did, it would rip your face off.
The Western lily is pretty darn cute.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Flowers are all right. Perhaps I'm a species chauvinist and I prefer my mammals, but
most people do.
Yeah. Let's talk about some fish now. Yeah. Fish heads. All right. Yeah. And friends of the Eel River, y'all have
are fish heads.
You are fish heads, and y'all have some exciting news. So what is going on in the Eel?
The big news this week, which most of you will probably have already heard a hint of by the time this airs on Saturday, is that on Wednesday of this week, a coalition of groups that call themselves the Planning Agreement Group, a really exciting name, renamed themselves the Two Basin Partnership, which is a more compelling name, have filed a document called a Feasibility Study Report with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. And what's important about this report is that it outlines a plan to take over the Potter Valley Project, which is two dams and associated power plant and tunnels and penstocks on the Upper Eel River, and to remove Scott Dam. So that's a pretty big deal. It's something that Friends of the Eel has been pushing for decades. And as we have understood for those decades, it's critical to allowing Eel River fisheries, especially our salmon and steelhead, to recover, to get access to the hundreds of stream miles above Scott Dam that have been completely obstructed by that dam for almost 100 years now. So this is a really, really important step in the right direction. The caveat, however, is that this is, in a lot of ways, a lot like the Klamath Dam Agreement, the first Klamath Dam Agreement that didn't work. And you may remember that the Klamath Dam Agreement was an agreement among the various parties, including the states, California and Oregon, the farmers, Indian tribes, fishermen, on a consensus proposal that they could all agree on. And they went to Congress and said, here's what we'd like to do. Will you please bless this and fund it? And Congress, which was dominated by Republicans, said, nope, we won't even think about it. So the Klamath parties went back to the drawing board and came up with a new proposal that is going forward now and is almost certainly going to work. This proposal for the Eel River dams basically says, here's what we think we want to do. State of California, why don't the legislature fund this? And, you know, it was a great idea 6 months ago. The new economic reality of post-COVID America suggests that there's not going to be a lot of budget surpluses in the foreseeable future. And maybe we need to look at a more realistic path to getting this done. So we got some real questions at Friends of the Eel about whether the plan outlined in this week's filing is really the best route, or it's certainly not the only route to Scott Dam removal. And let me just outline what the other route is. So PG&E owns the Potter Valley Project, the dams, the penstocks, the tunnels, that, you know, the whole deal. When PG&E went bankrupt after lighting the town of Paradise on fire, they withdrew their application with FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, to relicense the Potter Valley Project. They said, we're done with that. We're not doing it. And that really closed the door to PG&E renewing that license for another 50 years. So after that happened, FERC said, well, does anybody else want this license? And this planning agreement group, now the Two Basin Partnership, said, yeah, we'll take a swing at it. So this is that swing. And, you know, it's not impossible. It's a good idea. It's a start. But there are some real holes in the idea. And until those holes get filled in, this isn't going to be the plan that we think is necessarily going to work.
So, Scott, Friends of the Eel River was not part of that group, right? Or is not part of that group.
That's right.
So Friends of the Eel River did not have any input on the...
It's a little more complicated than that. The planning agreement group, now the Two Basin Partnership, is five entities that came out of the ad hoc working group that Representative Jared Huffman convened to work out a way forward here. And Friends of the Eel River has been part of that discussion from the beginning. So what that ad hoc group did was first try to get to the answers that FERC was going to need but couldn't get on its own schedule very easily. And the first one is, how can we secure fish passage to the Upper Eel? And the second was, how can we secure water supply to the Russian? So we did a bunch of really quality work on those two technical questions. And then when PG&E withdrew their relicensing application, we had to scramble. And it was, well, is somebody going to come in from another utility and propose to take these over? At that point, it looked like Sonoma Water and the Mendocino County Inland Water and Power Commission, which is a coalition of several different Mendocino County entities, including the Powder Valley Irrigation District, the city of Ukiah, the county itself. So those Russian River interests were going to go forward with a plan to undertake the relicensing. So the question was, would they go forward or would there be a sort of broader attempt? So the first thing that happened was that Caltrout and those Russian River interests joined together in a joint application. Humboldt County then joined that group. And then the Round Valley Indian tribes, who were invited from the outset to be part of that, also joined. So what that gave us was a small group, small enough to work together and make decisions, had the critical players involved, and representation of all the key interests. So what we've done at Friends of the Eel River, subsequent to that, is sign an agreement called the Common Interest Agreement that allowed us to participate in that group's discussions without having a vote. So all the original five parties had a vote. We had the information they had and were able to have regular meetings with Caltrout, Trout Unlimited, the Nature Conservancy, and our other allies. And so we did participate in the effort to come up with this plan. I wouldn't claim that the plan reflects, you know, our concerns entirely. Clearly it doesn't. It's a negotiated partial answer, you know, to the question, what are we going to do and how are we going to do it?
The TLDR is Friends of the Eel contributed. They didn't use all of your ideas. And
well, I would go further than that and say that, you know, the document on the table, the document that's before FERC, reflects, you know, what the parties were able to agree on. And it certainly does not reflect the conservation perspective on how we ought to move forward in every respect. And, you know, I want to be really clear that I feel like the conservation community has been coordinated and very much united in this. And, you know, we have been working very closely with the Round Valley tribes and with Humboldt County. And there's no space between our positions.
Well, that's wonderful. And it's so great that we've been able to kind of see what has happened on the Klamath and have been able to use that as a little bit of a test case example to move perhaps a little faster.
Yeah, we've learned from it, I think.
Yeah.
But, you know, the question is whether we've learned enough.
Of course. Well, yeah. Scott, that's terribly exciting. I think that is worth its own show. So maybe next week you'll find out more about this agreement.
You know, I've been trying to get Darren Maru, Caltrout's North Coast rep, on this show for a couple of months now, and he's just been too busy. So as soon as we get a moment of clarity, we're going to get Darren on and talk about some of the great projects that Caltrout's been doing on the Eel and some of Friends of the Eel's other work, as well as this enormously important, really historic move to free the Eel.
Awesome. Hey, gang, it's been wonderful to see your faces by Zoom, and I can't wait to collaborate and conspire again in person someday.
I hope you're not
as bad
as I by the time we get there.
All right. Well, y'all stay well, wash your hands, and see you on the other side. But yeah, good talking to you. Keep up the good work. Stay sane. That has been another issue of the Eco News Report. If you have any topics you'd like to have discussed in the Eco News Report, email me, tom@wildcalifornia.org. Many thanks, as always, to Fred for engineering and to my fellow collaborators, conspirators, Jen Kalt, Larry Glass, and Scott Greeson. Join us for more news from the North Coast next week at this time and channel.